This podcast is part of the Democracy Group.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are talking politics and religion without killing each other. I am your host, Corey Nathan, and it is an honor to be a part of the Democracy Group, a network of podcasts that examines what's broken in our democracy and how we can work together to fix it. Remember to subscribe or follow, depending on your app, and of course, leave us a good rating and write that review. The reviews really have been helping. Here's one I got from, I don't know how to say it, but it's X-A-V-I-E-T-M. So I'll just say Xavi-T-M. Xavi, I don't know. He said, nice point of view. I enjoy hearing the show and the different points of view. So thanks, Xavi or Xavi or Xavi-T-M. That's the idea. Different points of view, airing out and considering different points of view. And admittedly, sometimes you hear those points of view, try to give the person credence, and they're still, I don't know, left lacking, which we'll actually discuss in great depth today. Either way, Xavi, it's so meaningful that you would take the time to leave a review. So thank you sincerely. We got this one from Jan.cx or Jan.cx. Jan. Jan said, good conversation. I enjoyed the conversation with Alexander Vindman. I will definitely be adding this show to my library. Thanks, Jan.cx. We actually have a great, we have a treat coming up. It's either this week or next. We'll be having Rachel Vindman on the program. Alex's wife, Rachel Vindman, she has become an activist in her own right. And she's just a great writer. She certainly has a story to tell with her. She works with Red, Wine, and Blue and has this great podcast called The Suburban Women Problem. So spot on. It's so spot on for a constituency that's arguably going to have the most significant impact on who wins the 2024 election. But I am grateful that you found us, Jan, Jan.cx. I really do appreciate the review, and I'm glad you'll be listening. So, as usual, I'll put a link in our show notes to make it easy for you to find our page on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. It really does help get the word out so more people can find us and flesh out, you know, the just some important subjects, some stuff that's become hard to talk about because, I mean, I'm not the only one who sees us. We just seem so divided. Many of us, including me, we have these like atrophied abilities, atrophied talking muscles or something. I don't know how to describe it, but the ability to have conversations when we see things differently, I think if we can work those muscles again, I think it'll do a world of good. And that's actually what I wanted to talk about today. So one of the interesting things about hosting a program called Talking Politics and Religion Without Killing Each Other is folks might be inclined to think that I got it all figured out, that I'm like an expert who's going to teach everybody how to do this thing, when it's kind of the opposite. I know it's a huge problem in our country. I really want to do something about it in my own little corner of the world. But the truth is, part of the reason I feel compelled to try and make things better is that, frankly, sometimes I just suck at it. And to be fair, some people, you know, just really don't make it easy. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's experienced some of that. You know, I've said this before. There are times when I just can't do it anymore. I'm trying my best to apply the lessons I've learned from wonderful writers, wonderful contributors like Monty Guzman with her book, I Never Thought of That Way, what we discussed with David Brooks and his latest book about seeing others deeply and being deeply seen, or Alexandra Hudson's book, The Soul of Civility. I've been working on it earnestly. And it's fair to say that I've made progress for the most part. I try to be an active listener, remember folks' humanity, give them the respect I'd want to be extended. But sometimes I just lose my shit. Can I just say it? So I'm going to do a bit of a deep dive on a couple encounters I had with someone that honestly, it just didn't go well. I won't use his name. I'll be using a made up name. I'll just be calling him Evan. Because the point of me talking about this experience is to discuss the issues and how we respond to different encounters more so than making Evan the focus. I'm not trying to make it a mystery. My threads are relatively public. So it, you know, public, I should say. So it wouldn't take a genius to track down some of what I'll be referring to here, but he is someone I've had many conversations with before, even on this program, actually. Those conversations did go well. You know, typically I try not to make them debates or get caught up in a debate. I just like the exercise with this guy, with Evan, of getting together to glean a better understanding of where each other, where we're coming from, or so I thought. So I'm doing this for a couple of reasons. One, frankly, is just to air out some arguments, not just Evan is making, but I've heard from a number of people who are supportive of Trump. Another reason is that, like I said, our last couple interactions just didn't go well. So I want to take another look at how I engaged and think through how I could have gone about this better. But then also, this is the extra credit, if you will, is to shine a light on something. This is serious. Something happened right after October 7th. I guess it's fair to say I just want to let you know how it affected me. You know, I do it partly because I just need to share it, but also so that we all think about how to be better friends to folks who are processing traumatic events, whether it's happened to them personally or it's something that happened in the world that we're having trouble reckoning with. One other thing before I start, I will share with you that I invited this fellow, who I'm calling Evan for now. I invited him on here to have this conversation with me. I sent him a note on Facebook where we had we had one of our recent tete-a-tetes. And I also texted him, but he never responded. So here we are. So like I said, Evan and I stayed in touch. We started out, most of our conversations up until these encounters involved me asking him how he arrived at certain positions. I don't try to engage in debates a lot of times. What I try to do is give somebody the opportunity to share stuff about their life. And like I did with him, share stuff about his story to better understand the why behind the what. But also really to make sure the dude felt heard and respected. So over time, he just started feeling comfortable. He regularly hit me up to get my take on certain events that were happening. And at first, well, I assumed he was sincerely asking for my insights when he was asking for what I thought about stuff. I thought maybe, I don't know, I earned his trust and earned his respect and he'd want to hear what I thought. But the truth is, he was always going about it in a way that was sort of at best a friendly contest. Like, what do you think about this? You know, and then the bulk of his I am or text was clearly meant to say, how could you think this? You know? So regardless, most of the time I'd still try to flesh out my thoughts on a topic if I did have an informed view about it. Or so a lot of times I'd tell him I didn't know enough about something to pipe in about it or just didn't have a vested interest in where whatever he was talking about. But I hope that at the very least, the time I took to first hear him out and really try to understand him, and then to spell out my views on stuff that I do have an understanding of, I would have hoped that this guy, even if he never agreed with me, that he would have at least come to understand some of my views and my general philosophical disposition. So fast forward, all this is context, fast forward to October 7th. A lot of folks know I have family in Israel. That first Saturday of October on, I was in regular contact with my cousin Sheila, my cousin Dina, their families. You'll remember I even had one of the kids. She's not really a kid, but she's my cousin Dina's kid, who's in her 20s. I had Michal on the show to talk about her and her first cousin's experiences there in Israel. They were all getting called up to the IDF. So a lot of our correspondence was just checking in, like literally like just making sure everyone was accounted for. Sheila and Alan, they're the elders of the family in Israel. They're in Be'er Sheva, which happens to be very close to where the war broke out. So for them, it was sheltering in place. They were hearing bombs going off. They were, you know, we're all praying the Iron Dome would continue to protect them. So And this is obviously, you know, something I was learning about from my cousin's firsthand experiences, and I was paying close attention to it here as well. Like, how is the Biden administration? How are they navigating to support Israel? How are they, what Joe Biden does so well, mourn with those who have been, who lost loved ones, you know? And it's in the midst of all this that Evan reaches out. He sends me an IM that starts with, "Hey, I'm just wondering how you feel now that a lot of educated elites, ones whom you considered allies in your cause and views, are blindly defending Hamas and almost rationalizing the gruesome murder and rape of innocents." So I have a couple responses to this then and still today. I have responses on the substance of what he was saying, if you can call it substance, but I'll get to that in a second. First, I just got to ask, what the fuck, dude? Like, what the actual fuck? Like, are you so blinded by your loathing, by your absolute hatred for anyone you consider your political enemies, that you thought this was in any way an appropriate note to send? You're just wondering, This isn't just wondering. This is doing some sort of weird, morbid victory dance, like you've somehow been vindicated. I mean, what are you expecting my response to be to something like that? "Oh yes, my eyes have been opened. I was completely wrong all along. Now, sir, kind sir, sir, please help me to understand the error of my ways." Like, what is that? Is that what you're hoping for? Is that what you're expecting? Now, I'm spending my days trying to figure out if the members of my family have survived another day. And I got to hear from this guy who's got a bug up his ass about educated elites or whatever other groups he's learned to stereotype and lump all kinds of disdain on. Which, by the way, it's worth contrasting that. I do need to share this as a, you know, this I had a very different interaction with somebody else. A very dear friend of mine, some folks will know, she's been on the show, Lisa Sharon Harper. Now, Lisa and I have some very deep, deep differences on what's happening in Israel. Lisa's done a lot of work calling for a ceasefire. She speaks with scholars, religious leaders, to just, her heart is with the Palestinian people. She's doing a lot of work to better understand the plight of Palestinian people. And she's a lot more focused on the horrors that Palestinians have been subjected to. I guess she's someone Evan would consider an educated elite. Nonetheless, we obviously have differences, but the week after October 7th and several times in subsequent weeks, she'd call me up or we'd be on a Zoom. And do you know what she said? "How you doing, brother? How are you?" Not, "Don't you see this is evil?" Not, "Agree with me," or "You're evil." Not any of that. And she was doing the work. She's still doing the work to really understand what the hell's happening over there, both currently and historically. But she doesn't hit me up and say, "Well, you just don't understand." She asks me with heartfelt sincerity, with heartfelt empathy, "How you doing, brother?" Despite our differences, despite the politics, despite the history and everything else, she still has a humanity to see me and care about me and my family and know I was hurting and my family was in harm's way. To see that and just sit with me as a brother, as a friend in my pain. "How you doing, brother?" But Evan comes at me with, "Hey, I'm just wondering how you feel now that a lot of the educated elites, ones whom you considered allies in your cause and views, are blindly defending Hamas and almost rationalizing the gruesome murder and rape of innocents." So I get back to him at that time. First, I did clarify that, yes, I was horrified by those, you know, who were engaging in violent anti-Semitism. And You know, I try to even explain the concept of generational trauma, that it brings up generational trauma that my people feel in our bones. And folks who've been listening to this program know it's something we've talked about extensively on this show. But I also said how, I did tell Evan in that first reply back to him that I was sad. I was sad that for all of our conversations, one thing was clear, that he had no idea what my actual views were or are. He had and has no idea what my causes and views are, as he put it, or who I'd consider allies. So he responds by saying, "You have largely aligned yourself with the views of anti-Trump. I'm merely pointing out that this would have never happened under his presidency, Trump's presidency. And he was probably the most pro-Israel president in our times." Okay. So now let me just shift gears for a second. This whole talking point of this never would have happened under Trump. First of all, one can't argue with a counterfactual. In some ways, it's not even worth responding to that. But my immediate thought was that you'll have to forgive me. You'll just have to forgive me for not wanting to support the guy who dines with neo-Nazis, who says they're very fine people, the ones who march through the night chanting, "The Jews will not replace us." You'll have to bear with me as I throw up in my mouth at such a notion. Evan liked the sound of it, maybe coming out of Mark Levin's pie hole. And listen, I'll have a debate. I'll have a debate with my Rabbi Honi and others I've gone to shul with on several Saturdays at the local Chabad since October. I'll listen to Mark Blazer's thoughts on it. He's the rabbi from Temple Beth on Me here in town. He came on the show very early on to talk about Trump's involvement with Israel. But I'm sure as hell not going to take my cues from Evan and whatever garbage he's memorizing from some angertainment conflict entrepreneur. And by the way, the U.S. has been Israel's best friend since before they even became a nation. So please just stop with this. It's like an invented reality that if he says it enough times, he thinks we'll start to believe it. It's not persuasive. It's not a particularly compelling talking point. And Trump, the guy who just said that Hitler did some very good things, is not the guy I'm going to be celebrating as the most pro-Israel anything, let alone president. But also, going back to what Evan wrote, I've aligned myself with Trump. He says, "I've aligned myself with Trump." Okay. So that's one way to put it. I've said this many times. I hate the words, actions, and characters of Donald Trump, partly based on I have deeply held theological convictions, but also based on my political views as a conservative, a Burkean, Bucklean, Jack Kempian conservative. And I'll probably do a whole show on that in the coming weeks. So nonetheless, Evan says, "I've aligned myself with anti-Trump." You do know there's a whole universe of us who are not on the Trump train, right? And an entire very wide, very diverse world of citizens, elected officials, religious leaders, journalists, many, many others who have serious, serious issues with Donald Trump. And I tried to explain this to Evan. We got a really huge tent that we have folks from like Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger all the way to Bernie Sanders and AOC, Mitt Romney, and actually Trump's own cabinet secretaries, senior officials, John Kelly, Jim Mattis, Mike Pence, Bill Barr, Rex Tillerson, Nikki Haley, John Bolton, Stephanie Grisham, H.R. I could go on. But the point Evan is trying to make is that Liz Cheney, because she's spoken out in favor of the Constitution, or Bill Barr, because he wouldn't breach the very heart of the constitutional order, the peaceful transfer of power, because he wouldn't lie and say the election was stolen, that all these people, as conservative as they come, that Adam Kinzinger, who voted with Trump over 90% of the time when he was in the House, and even voted for him in 2020, because guys like that wouldn't sign on to overturning the election and cheering on the guys who violently stormed the Capitol and pretend that the guy who took a dump in the middle of the Capitol Rotunda was merely participating in legitimate discourse, that all of these people might as well be the same as Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. That's a pretty big freaking leap. It's a pretty epic example of, I'm just going to say it, stereotyping and prejudice. It's political prejudice. You're taking one data point, the fact that any number of people, a large, diverse array of people from all different backgrounds and political persuasions who all agree that Donald Trump is unacceptable. That's it. That's the one data point. And what you're saying is they're all the same. The way I asked them was, aligning myself with the views of anti-Trump puts me in a mind-bogglingly broad category. From Liz Cheney to Ilhan Omar, you do realize how wide a chasm there is between just those two, right? To which he responds, when the choice is Biden, Trump, and you chose Biden, or even third party, yes, you're liberal. And I'm quite certain that if he was on this pod with me right now, and again, I did invite him a couple different times, he would do nothing other than defend that very point. Because Evan has made it clear in no uncertain terms that he sees things through an absolute binary, through an entirely categorical lens of this side and the other side. So if my side has Chris Christie and Bruce Springsteen, and your side has Donald Trump and anyone who thinks he's just peaches, all right, whatevs. Seriously, though, that just seems like such a narrow view of the world, like just a narrow way to see things through this side and the other side kind of lens. I got a lot of people on my side, and we are all so different, and a lot of us disagree with each other on a lot of different things. So I guess maybe there's your side, and then there's the rest of the world. So going back to the whole, this never would have happened. This is worth revisiting for a second. This never would have happened under Trump. This isn't the kind of talking point that's meant to get me thinking or get me to reflect on, that's an interesting. No, it's meant to be like a showstopper, like an exclamation point or a rhetorical grenade to lob in the middle of a conversation to kill all consideration about the issue. But discerning minds can refuse to allow this nonsense, these nonsensical hypotheticals. And even if, like me, you're not a foreign policy expert, we can just ask, what we can do is we can just ask people who are foreign policy experts. Not just any old folks who specialize in foreign affairs, but Trump's own appointed and his most trusted advisors that he appointed to his cabinet and that he chose to represent the United States under his leadership. Ask him. Ask John Kelly. John Kelly was his first Department of Homeland Security, Secretary of Homeland Security, before becoming his chief of staff. Ask Jim Mattis, his first Secretary of Defense. Ask H.R. McMaster, his first National Security Advisor. Rex Tillerson, his first Secretary of State. Any number of other people who've gone on the record. John Bolton. Ask any one of them what they think about this never would have happened under Trump. On Israel or anywhere else around the world, ask them. The bottom line, the real question we have to ask, will our country be safer under Donald Trump, or will we be putting the United States and the rest of the world in grave peril if he's given a second term? That's the question. Ask his guys, the guys he appointed, the guys that really do know foreign policy. But, okay, the different way to think about this isn't so much about refuting this kind of nonsense, coming up with the perfect response, because it's nonsense. The idea is, part of the idea is whether I even feel compelled to know about stuff I don't know as much about, just so I can get dragged into a little debate like this on one particular point, or whether we have other ways of thinking about these kinds of things and responding to people when they bring it up. So in this instance, it's okay to say, I don't know as much about that topic, but this person does, and this person does. And oh, it looks like they were pretty close to the guy, worked really close with the guy who's the object of your admiration. And what do you know? They don't seem to share the confidence you just casually threw out there. This never would have happened under Trump. Give me a damn break. So here's a good time to be candid about what we're doing here. We're talking politics and religion without killing each other. And you can tell I'm getting pretty hot under the collar, right? We're all having the tough conversations across our differences, and sometimes you're going to get upset. trying to understand each other better ain't easy. Trying to do this whole thing of democracy or democratic republic or just our overall civic life together in a better, healthier way, or just learning how to retain friendships with people regardless of how deep our differences are. However, there is a line. There is a point where, as Yuval Levin put it, you get to a point where you just have to say to your Uncle Stanley at Thanksgiving, "Stanley, I really strongly disagree with you. Now pass the gravy." Or I love that. On a more serious note, you do have to, like for me, you could tell how heated I get about this. So you have to know your own limitations. I got to know my own limitations. Or we could think of it as healthy boundaries. And this conversation was clearly not going anywhere good. I certainly wasn't in a place mentally, intellectually, or emotionally to gently and graciously continue to indulge him, to indulge these categorical or prejudicial ideas that Evan was bandying about. So I basically cut him off. I didn't tell him to fuck off. I wanted to. I didn't call him names. I wanted to. Here's what I said. I just said, "Now I have to ask you to end this conversation. I know at points you're trying to show sympathy for what's going on, but it's tinged with a level of ignorance with the assertion of generalizations that are deeply troubling." And I made a point of not engaging with the dude until I was ready, which turned out to be several months. And look, I said, you know, I as I had time to reflect on that encounter, I'm not sure how else I might have responded. Being an active listener, seeking to understand people, giving others the respect you'd want them to give you, it doesn't mean you just let people say whatever the hell they want. It doesn't mean I don't have a strong and informed and even passionate perspective on certain things. So in that part of our encounter, I'm really not sure how else I would have handled that, other than maybe just like cutting him off and not engaging in the first place. However, what happened last week, candidly, I don't think I come out smelling like a rose. So sometime in the last few weeks, I saw that he left a comment on one of my posts, but I still chose not to react. I hadn't talked to him since that post October 7th, tit for tat, whatever. I just wasn't ready yet. But then about a week ago, I posted a passage from scripture that he responded to again. And it was just this passage toward the end of Leviticus 19 that I posted without no commentary, just the quote from Leviticus itself. It reads, "When a foreigner," the part from Leviticus reads, "When a foreigner resides among you in your land, do not mistreat them. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt." Love them as yourself. There was some conversation on there, a few comments, some back and forth with other friends. But then Evan leaves a comment that starts with, "Choose one, an open border or a welfare state." So, can I just say, if this guy's anything, he's predictable. Evan leaving an either or is just about as predictable as the sun coming up in the east. Either one extreme or the other. I think he meant closed border, but either way, this is just about the most predictable response. Partly because, again, if you go and read the show notes of a Dan Bongino podcast or a Matt Walsh podcast, whatever Evan's main commentary sources are, these sorts of either ors, that's the default. And why? We've learned this too, as we've talked to different experts on the show. It's because strict partisanship is simpler to sell. It's easier to sell. Polarization appeals to our lizard brain. A world of black and white, or only good guys and bad guys, and you're either on my team or you're the enemy. It takes so much less imagination and creativity. It doesn't require even a faithfulness to the truth or accuracy, because it appeals to just these primal instincts we all still have, wanting to know who the enemy is, so that we can crush them or entirely subdue them as a threat. And that's all it is. But then Evan also, in this, you know, initial comment, goes on to comment on the Bible. He says, moreover, the Bible references foreigners arriving, but not overwhelming the system. The Bible references foreigners arriving, but not overwhelming the system. And listen, I'm not going to sit in this mini Bible study with my boy Evan. He'll be the first one to tell you he's not a church going guy. Y'all know I love me some Bible. I read my Bible every day. I go cover to cover from Genesis 1 and Revelation 22. I start all over again. I've been doing it for 20 years. So far be it from me to have to suffer through any moreovers with the Bible references and doesn't reference from Evan. So yeah, you can probably tell from my tone. I'm in no saintly mindset about this. No matter how many times I've read through the Bible, no matter how much I meditate on the fruit of the Spirit, and I truly aspire to love patiently and kindly, as I've said many times before, I believe in Jesus, but I believe even more, if that's possible, in one other thing, and that is, I ain't Jesus. I am not him. So being very much not Jesus, my reply to Evan was simply, oh, how wonderful to see you here, kind sir. How is your dear mother and your Aunt Tilly? Please send them my warmest regards and let's be sure to schedule some tea. Well, no, that's actually not what I said. That would have been funny if I actually did say that. Hello, dear sir. What I said was, your either or binary framework is overly simplistic to the point of fallacious. I won't even bother addressing your lame attempt at referencing the Bible. You do well to read it before engaging about it. That's all I said. You know, and I admit, not the model of I never thought of it that way or the soul of civility. I admit it. I came right out of the gate with some sharp elbows. It was the first time I said anything to this guy, since the whole touchdown dance he took after October 7th. So when he chimed in on a post that, you know, was nothing but a piece of scripture with his typical either you're this or you're that, and then a little bonus of a little Bible commentary from this guy, I just wasn't going to have it. Could I have responded differently? Sure. Could I have chosen to not respond at all? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are so many other more wise, more gracious ways to react or not react at all. So I share that response with you as a confession of what I was saying before. Sometimes I just lose my shit, and his immediate response back to me was, do you think you could respond to people without being a total dick? I could. Most often I do. This, you know, like I said, it wasn't me at my most saintly, and as his immediate reply indicates, my words did not inspire any sort of reflection, nor were my words persuasive. I wasn't really going for that, obviously, but still, I could have reached out privately, like I've done many times in the past, and said, hey, man, what you said and how you acted was really hurtful. Or not even say what he did was hurtful. Just say, let's go grab a beer or something. I think we need to talk this through. I could have said that. And full disclosure, you know, just to share with you, I have taken this guy out for a bite to eat and some drinks. But this time, you know, in the past, that's what I did several times. You know, and I've done this with other people, too. This time, I just wasn't having it. So I went back and forth with him a couple of times. I tried to make clear what exactly I just found so hurtful about his words and his conduct. And he replied by calling me a fucking dick and then an asshole. Anyway, it's still up there last I checked. So you could certainly go to my page and, you know, read it if you're so inclined. And yeah, I know it's social media. It never goes well on social media, you might say, but I disagree, partly because I do not want to cede the ground of any social media, any of our shared spaces. And I also abide by a few basic, I don't want to cede the ground to, you know, the screamers and the extremists. These are our spaces too, right? So I've also done, for the most part, pretty well on there, partly by abiding by a few basic rules, like not engaging with people I don't already have a relationship with, at least in most cases, And like I said, I'll often text somebody and be quick to get together for a coffee or something with them rather than try to hash this kind of thing out via IM or in a comment thread or anything like that. I've done this with Evan. And if nothing else, I sure as hell won't let this kind of encounter ruin all the great connections and conversations that I do have through Facebook and Instagram threads and LinkedIn and all the rest. But this one clearly didn't go well. And just like a lot of endeavors, we often learn a lot more from the bad, our mistakes, from our losses than we do from our successes. So I know I didn't act in the best way in this instance. I'm going to be thinking about it for a while. Not that a guy like Evan is interested in engaging in good faith, at least not at this point. Certainly not with me. But I got to know my limitations. When a dude is basically talking smack as if the Dodgers just beat the Mets in a playoff series, when my family is in a life or death struggle halfway around the world, that's not a guy I'm going to have a meaningful, in-depth conversation with. One that's mostly like a characterized by goodwill. So I got to know my boundaries. And when I'm putting myself in a position to not be my best. I'm going to be thinking about this one for a bit, just so that for the next conversation with someone who is coming in goodwill and good faith, I won't be in battle mode, that I can exhibit better virtues of being a good neighbor. Just try one more time to do better at talking about the important stuff, to not being part of the problem, but to talking politics and religion without killing each other. Lastly, I'll just say, if you are still listening, I'd really love to know what you think. What I'm most interested in is how to do this whole thing better. Like I said, I just refuse to give up on reaching across our differences and having healthier, more meaningful conversations with people that aren't like me or have different views from me. But this encounter obviously did not go well. I lost my shit at a certain point. I'm not even interested necessarily in you could have said this to win the point or, to like get the contest of a debate. Like that's not my gig. I'm not interested. So I am interested in better dialogue, retaining and nurturing relationships. This is part of my question that I'd love to hear from you about. Sometimes do we just have to love people from far away? Like someone says something so ignorant, so ill-timed, so insensitive that you just got to say, love you, dude, but I'm going to love you from far enough away that I don't got to be subjected to your, toxicity. It's bad for me. I don't know. I'm left with more questions than answers on this one, as you could probably tell. So I'll just wind it down there. And as always, if you dig what we're doing here, remember to write those reviews. They're really helping. And tell a friend about Talk Politics and Religion Without Killing Each Other. Tell a friend about this program so you can get in a fight with them just like I did. I'm sure you'll be better at it than what happened with me and Evan. Evan. So tell your Evan or Harry or Xavier or Sally or whoever to look us up. You can find us on all the podcast apps by simply typing in Talkin' Politics. Remember, the Talkin' is without the G, T-A-L-K-I-N, Talkin' Politics. And just look for our big purple logo. Or you can find me online at Corey S. Nathan. That's Corey with an E, S as in Sam, at Corey S. Nathan. Find me if you haven't already. I really would love to know what you think. And I promise I'll try not to lose my shit with you. Now, go talk some politics and religion with gentleness and respect, and have a great week.